everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Anthony's Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Seipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing this week?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Okay.
Just watched Rich Hill have 5 very good innings, and then we will ignore the 6th, but that's fine.
That's good.
So yeah. Also, this is probably like the worst lineup in baseball to throw Rich Hill against. The Astros have a lot of righties too, but like it doesn't scare me as much as the top four of Springer, Vladito, Simeon, Bichette against soft-tossing 41-year-old left-hander.
Whose spin rates have been down for some reason. But I mean, he was good. So if he does that every time, then...
Yeah, we'll be fine.
I'm fine with trading a 23-year-old kind of catcher in AA for that.
Don't forget the $600,000, you know?
Oh, yeah, with Tommy Hunter and his back that got destroyed getting out of bed, according to Trevor May on a podcast.
I'm not a fan of trading basically anybody because just the amount of time that I have to dedicate to watching these guys play, but I'm completely fine with this move because, I mean, Matt Dwyer, you know, good luck, whatever, but...
I literally cannot remember anything he's done so far.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I knew the name, and I was like, oh, okay. The Rays just wanted to get rid of Rich Hill. Cool. Mm-hmm.
And plus, I like Rich Hill, so that's always, you know, good.
I wonder if he'll be a good fit in City. Like, I know this is not talking about the 41-year-old. It's not the minor league podcast, but because, like, he's a fly ball pitcher, and the
from
place
From Complex
is...
to Over the Hill.
From Complex to Dick Mountain. But, like, he's a fly ball pitcher, and that stadium has been playing huge this year. So I wonder if it's just going to be a good fit for him for half a season.
What one could say the Rays were over the hill, and that's him.
All right, well, let's move on to promote extend trade then. And I kind of lost my voice yesterday. I was at Atlantic City. I went to go see the GCW show, and... Nick Gage shockingly lost the championship.
Someone clarify for me, is GCW a wrestling thing?
Yes. It is, yes.
Okay, thank you.
So, I'm not going to do that to you. But since I do have the two of you here, I'm going to... we'll talk about not shocking losses in wrestling, but we'll talk about shocking video game moments.
Oh, excellent.
So, for promote extend trade this week, I guess we'll go, you know, most shocking to least shocking. First, we have Sephiroth permanently killing Aeris in Final Fantasy VII. Then we have Darth Malak revealing that you are actually Darth Revan in Knights of the Republic.
Ooh.
And finally, the revelation that you, James, killed your wife and that everything that's going on is your punishment in Silent Hill 2.
Man, yeah.
Right, so I have to disclose up front. I've never played a Final Fantasy games, but the other two, excellent choices.
Little me playing KOTOR and not really knowing what I'm doing because it was too advanced for me at the time, and then getting that reveal, I was like sitting in my room like, "Whoa, this is what art is."
Older me playing that game and knowing what I'm doing, and then getting that reveal, I was like, "Whoa!" So.
Weirdly enough, growing up, I didn't have, like, a gaming computer, so I played KOTOR on Xbox.
Me too. That's where I played it, too.
So I don't know if this was an issue with my Xbox or just, you know, trying to play an RPG on a console in the first place, but late game, right around the time, like, right after that revelation, the game basically just wouldn't run anymore. Like, it would freeze for a solid 15 seconds in the middle of any action. So unfortunately, the first time I got the reveal, I'm like, oh, that's great, and then the game was ruined. But when I played it, I'm pretty sure it was an issue with my Xbox. And the OG Xboxes and even the Xbox 360 were kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah, not the best. They didn't hold up well.
So I'm a star... After slowly growing more and more jaded with Star Wars, more recent Star Wars content has brought me back to Star Wars, and therefore... Definitely the extend for me there.
Yeah, same.
And I played it recently during lockdown last year, and it holds up. It's still very good.
Yep.
It's old, like obviously, but like those games are could be old and also play well, you know, because mm-hmm. it doesn't really rely on anything crazy.
They're remaking it, right? Or no?
I don't know. I mean, in a weird way, the fact that its combat system is so dated makes it hold up better.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Like, yeah. If you go play another old BioWare game, not that old, but old, you play, like, Mass Effect, the first Mass Effect.
Tough.
Right? Like, because it's a moved, it's, like, the first game with a more modern combat system, but you're so used to the 300th iteration of that combat mm-hmm. system in mm-hmm. modern yeah. games that you play that, and it's like, this sucks.
Even now, I'm playing through Legendary Edition, and I'm on 3, and I'm like, oh, yes. This is what combat's supposed to feel
even
like.
Even 2 is pretty good.
Yeah.
Andrew, for all the flaws, Andrew, we're going way off the question here. For all the flaws Andromeda had, its combat system was quite fun.
Yes.
Anyway.
It's fun to play.
Yeah. Anyway, love BioWare, love KOTAR. Screw you, EA, for ruining yet another wonderful franchise.
Yeah, I think that's it for me, just because I was, like, so mind-blown. Like, I played Final Fantasy VII after the fact, so I was like, oh, yes, that's a good twist, but I think the emotional time of me being young and playing that game was very, mm-hmm. like, it sticks in my mind as, like, video games could do that, because I was playing, like, little kid stuff. Not really little kid stuff, but, like, platformers and stuff where mm-hmm. the story isn't really the main part of it.
You're playing like, Sonic.
Yeah, I'm playing, like, Crash Bandicoot and shit.
Gotta
like,
go fast, man.
Out of nowhere. Dr. Robotnik just fucking assassinates Tails.
I'm like, no, Tails! Not Knuckles.
We're gonna attract a very weird part of the internet by delving into Sonic discussions here.
No, yeah, we don't want to do that.
Sonic, the last movie I saw pre-pandemic in a movie theater.
Imagine bullying an entire studio into making their product less shit. If only that worked on EA!
EA, yep.
The problem with EA is people love those freaking sports games and just play them like gotchapon machines.
And they all hate them. Like, everyone
hates them. I don't understand it!
Everyone hates plays them. Everyone's so mad at Madden, and then it sells millions because everyone buys it again.
And not just sells millions, but now they sell cards within it too. It just prints mm-hmm. money and lets them do shit things with other games. Alright, I'll stop now.
I have to, you know, extending Knights of the Old Republic, obviously. I'm going to promote Final Fantasy because that was, like, super emotional. Mm-hmm. And I think that with Silent Hill 2, I think that, like, the revelation is just kind of not that important because playing that game, I was just fucking terrified.
Yeah.
So it didn't really matter why I'm terrified. I just want to, like, escape and not have to deal with everything anymore, you know?
I would say it is a good twist, though.
Yeah.
Tie that in. They do a good job with it.
I was really hoping you'd drop the revelation in Mass Effect 1 when you find out what the Reapers actually are. But, you know, can't do two BioWare things. Fair, fair.
And as we established last week, I have not played Mass Effect.
Yes, this is my weekly encouragement for you to immediately end the podcast. We can end the podcast early if you want, if you just go start playing Mass Effect immediately.
All right, guys, I'll be back later.
We'll be back 300 hours of gameplay later.
There's also another one. I've never played BioShock, but apparently that had a major twist to it. That
oh,
was
it
like
does, yeah.
the
yeah.
most recent one, yeah. I mean, at least with BioShock, you don't have to play 1 and 2 to enjoy Infinite.
Yeah, that's fair. And 2 is rough anyway. 1 is good.
2 isn't good.
All right, so let's move on now. And normally we'd start off our episode after promoting Centrade with our CPBL, KBO, NPB update, but I am unfortunately going to just have to end that as a weekly feature because I started a new job, and just in addition to there being more work that I have to do, my commute is just terrible, and I just don't have the time and the energy and everything to stay up on the Met system in addition to 3 other leagues. So I just hope that all the people that enjoyed, you know, hearing about the Unilions and the LG Twins and the Occult Swallows and all those players that we talked about, you know, I just encourage all those people to keep following those players, those teams, those leagues. And, you know, the world is a smaller place. So it's very easy to, you know, hop on YouTube and watch clips and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, look at Ohtani. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, he was a phenom in the MPB, but, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of people are just like, yeah, whatever. And now he's a phenom here. So, you know, just because a guy plays in Korea or a guy plays in Japan or a guy plays in Taiwan, you know, now doesn't mean that he's not going to eventually play in the U.S. and not, you know, possibly emerge as a star here. So.
I also feel like U.S. leagues in general are getting better about not caring where guys come from in that regard.
Yeah. Like,
there's way more of a chance now of the Chris Flexons of the world and the Eric Thames of the world on top of guys coming over in general.
At Mets, sign some notable Asian players, please.
Yes. I mean, just sign players, notable players, period. Doesn't matter where they're from. All right, so we have some news to catch up on here. A couple of weeks ago, there's a big story that erupted when minor league advocates publicly shamed the Mets for how they treated and compensated minor league players, and some media outlets, you know, big media outlets picked up on that. And basically that led to Steve Cohen, you know, being forced to respond after being publicly shamed. And I don't know if a Twitter post counts as a statement, but, you know, he said on Twitter that he was going to look into it and that there would be a comprehensive response to the points that were raised by the end of the week. And that was multiple weeks ago now. And there hasn't been any kind of public comprehensive response, but there is something of a silver lining here, because according to some family members and, you know, of a handful of players that are currently in the system, the Mets have addressed some of the issues that were raised. According to a report from the Daily News, players who participated in extended spring training in Florida, they're going to get back pay for the months that they were there. Players from the Cyclones and that war with the Cyclones are going to be reimbursed for the apparent $10 a night hotel costs that the team was making them pay. And players that are with the Syracuse Mets, they're going to get a $300 a month housing stipend. That's still nowhere near enough. I mean, literally nobody on St. Lucie or nobody on Binghamton was even addressed. So, you know, it's a half measure. And it's still really, even those things being addressed, it's still like the tip of the iceberg to all the things that could be improved in the minors. And the story of like how minor leaguers are treated and everything, that's kind of moved on to the Angels now, because some players in their system have come forward and shared some real personal detailed testimony of the stuff that's going on in that organization. So I hope that this doesn't get swept under the rug in regards of the Mets, and, you know, not really Cohen, not really following through and, you know, publicly talking about what was going to be done. As we've talked about, a lot needs to be done.
Yeah. I mean, I understand both mindsets on this. Like, at least he did something. It's better than nothing. It's mm-hmm. still nowhere near enough. Whoops, sorry. Like, just nowhere near enough, and all of these costs are so marginal that, like, he could do so much more and never notice it. So, I don't know. Does he deserve any credit for what is mostly a half measure? Don't know that he does.
Yeah. It's just so little. Like, it's more than it was, obviously. But it's also so little that, like, I don't want to say it almost doesn't matter, because that's definitely not true. But also, like, he needs to do way more in order to, like, really get that reputation out of the way of, like, not treating mm-hmm. their managers right. And we don't even know, like, if that is everything, because that's just been what's reported, and the Mets haven't said anything themselves. And if we don't hear anything from any minor leaguers or any other reporting, we might never know what the Mets do. Like, I don't want to assume that the Mets are doing well here, because they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt, but also it's possible that they just are doing better than we know and they haven't said anything. But also, why wouldn't you say anything? That's such an easy...
Exactly. It's like, weird.
Like, it's such an easy win for him to tweet out some shit about the minor league, like, contract, like, paying minor leaguers more or paying them their housing or some shit like that. And then, like, everyone is like, oh, look how good the Mets are doing. Yay. You know? But if he doesn't do
you
that...
You just blame it'll... everything on the Wilpons, too, and no one will bat an eye.
Yeah.
No.
It would easily be like, it took us this long for some BS reason that isn't actually true, and then we fixed it, and everyone would be happy. So I don't really get why they would keep it under wraps if that's what they're doing, but...
That's what it seems to be, because I know the Daily News article cited sources in the team, you know, that just wanted to be off the record, quoted anonymously. So, I mean, clearly the team, on an official basis, doesn't want to discuss how things are being changed. But we do know that things are being changed. So, yeah,
that just doesn't make sense to me. Like, why you would purposefully, like, not... I guess use it for PR, like it's a shitty thing to say, but it's true. Like,
but yeah, no.
I mean, if I thought they had any morals, and again, maybe we're being too harsh, but why should they deserve the benefit of the doubt? It'd be nice to imagine that they're just doing it and not worrying about leveraging it for PR.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be a nice thing to think. I don't know that there's any reason to really jump to that conclusion.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I don't think they would. Straight up. I think they would use it for clout. And, like, if you... They would be doing a good thing for a bad reason, I guess, but they'd still be doing the good thing. So I'd rather get see the tweet that Cohen said that he is paying all the minor leaguers all this stuff and getting the public praise for it. I'd rather that than them doing it quietly.
Mm-hmm. Also, just to see what it is that they're addressing, because...
Also to know that it's actually real, like,
right.
Yeah,
because then I couldn't, there's no way to doubt, like, he wouldn't tweet that and lie, because that's an easy way to, everyone would just be like, you're lying, like, here's the proof, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, nor am I super well-versed in, like, this part of the CBA. I don't know if there's anything legally that prevents them
maybe
from just, like... off the cuff saying, hey, yeah, now we're paying you $100K a year. All good.
I would also say he probably doesn't care about that because, like, the stuff with the Lindor negotiations was definitely not player-friendly.
See, weirdly, though, I think, like, no one on the league side is going to give that much of a shit about an owner tampering on Twitter, right? But they'd probably very much give a shit about this, and then he might have problems.
That's fair.
So... Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what the legal situation is there. It'd be nice. He, along with every other major league organization, has more than enough financial resources to just unilaterally call every minor leaguer and say, yeah, your yearly salary is now $80K. Have fun.
Yep.
I mean, just to put it in context, if he said that your yearly salary now is going to be like – the federal minimum wage, which is like $25,000 or whatever it is, that would almost be like double their salaries.
Sure.
Just say how much, you know, just to demonstrate, like, that's how little these guys are really getting compensated.
Even as a grad student, I make more than these guys, which is absurd because grad students just eternally bitch about how little we get paid. And to be clear, we don't get paid anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, you need to get paid more too. But
yeah, but we're still somehow making more than...
A professional athlete.
Yeah. And I was in Mina Kimes' tweets, and she was talking about this a little bit, and just the amount of people who reply saying, oh, they get paid to play a game? What about all these other people who do harder, more important jobs? It's like, yeah, they should get paid more too, but that's not
that's not the argument.
Yeah, yeah, we should let's pay everyone more. Absolutely,
I agree. It's also so weird to me because baseball is the only minor league baseball as an organization is the only one who treats their minor leaguers like this. Like the NBA has even G leaguers make more than this, and the top G leaguers sometimes make hundreds of thousands, and like.
Really?
Yeah, like the really, because you don't have to go to college. You could like just go straight to the G League, and sometimes they will give signing bonuses and stuff to those players to get them to sign. But like hockey is like a very livable wage to be a minor league hockey player. Like the NFL obviously doesn't have one, but And the NFL treats their rookies like they get paid a ton. That's why a guy like Kyler Murray chose to be an NFL player instead of a baseball player, because he made more in his rookie deal being like a top five pick than he probably will in a decade of baseball. So yep. It's not only does this hurt the people who are playing, it hurts future people too. Like the 15-year-old kid, if you have a choice between do you want to play baseball for below the poverty line to maybe make $500,000 in arbitration. Like, Pete Alonso is a star, and he's made more money in the home run derbies than he has as a Met. Like, that's a fundamental problem in general. So, like, just play a different sport. Like, I'd rather play basketball or football. And even though football is, like, worse for your health, Kyler Murray is a multi-millionaire with generational wealth now. Where in baseball, he'd be in the Midwest making $2 an hour or whatever, you know. It's just it's like, I don't, it's a loss for everyone except the owners. So, and that's why it hasn't been fixed.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, the we have only so much power of amplification doing what we do, so hopefully the you know, organizations like, you know, More Than Baseball and Minor League Advocates, obviously that's their job. That's not the right word to put it, but that's the, you know, whole point of those organizations. They'll keep the pressure up. Yep. But hopefully, you know, the New York Daily News and the New York Posts and, you know, just the local media will hopefully keep on top of it, because really.
And the national media too, like places like The Athletic and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true. Them too, national outlets that have, you know, kind of will write local stories. But, you know, that's the only way that this will not just kind of disappear. So hopefully that is the case and it just doesn't, you know, get forgotten about and then goodbye.
I feel like it's just like getting more traction every single time, though. Like this talked about, it's always more and more teams getting shown for what it is. So hopefully that keeps it in the spotlight.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't have any illusions that, you know, at the end of the season or next year or something, Major League Baseball will be like, yeah, we're going to completely rehaul the way that we pay our minor leaguers and treat our minor leaguers, just like we completely overhauled the system itself.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I don't think it's happening. But no. That's why you just got to, like I said, hopefully the pressure just stays on and they're just shamed to marginal. They're just shamed to literally treat their players just with a little bit more dignity, you know, which is sad. But you know what? I guess that is a very good encapsulation of America in 2021, unfortunately. All right. So let's move on now to our weekly affiliate updates. We missed, you know, last week because of drafting and everything like that, but we're back with this, and starting with Syracuse is probably not the best way to reintroduce this, because they had a pretty lousy week, as is the norm, I guess, and they just went winless. They went 0-6 against the Trenton Buffalo Thunder Bisons, so that drops them to 23-48 on the year, which is 23.5 games behind the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders in first place in the AAA East Northeast.
They're winning less than a third of their games. Jeez, man.
Listen. I mean, it's rough because they keep losing players, but also to the major league team, but also they were bad before that, too.
Do you want a silver lining?
Go yep. for it.
Okay. The Kannapolis Cannonballers, they're also 23-48. And the Hartford Yard Goats and the Visalia Rawhide, they're even worse. So
Who is in this league? Who's winning these games? I don't understand.
At least we're not the Yard Goats. At least we're not the Rawhides. That's basically all I have to say.
Are the Yard Goats still the Rockies affiliate? Yes. I guess you could have a bad Major League team and a bad AAA team. But
that's even worse.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's like, oh, this is nobody on the horizon. At least the Mets had all those guys in Syracuse to, you know, fill in when they needed to, which is part of the reason why Syracuse is so bad right now.
We knew what Syracuse was.
Right.
Syracuse was an extension of the taxi squad, basically.
Mm-hmm. As AAA kind of should be.
Especially with how their system is set up. Like, like Beatty should be there next year and stuff like that, so that'll be at least a little more fun. But even then, like, he's just going to be there by himself with a bunch of like 30-year-olds.
Oh, hopefully they don't teach him like bad habits, like tobacco.
And Khalili will be still be there.
Oh yeah, that's true. He should still be there.
Yeah, right. I mean,
and he's been playing pretty well.
Now that I've said that, he's going to get traded in like 2 days. So
before the podcast even comes out, he's a Cub for Chris Bryant or something.
Yeah.
Quick, check Slack right now.
No, we're clear for the moment.
Okay. All right. So anyway, obviously when you go 0-6, there just are no redeeming moments whatsoever. So we're just going to leave it at that Syracuse went 0-6 and move on to the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, who had a 500 week against the Erie Seawolves. They went 3-3. So on the year, they are 27-42. Which is 17.5 games behind the Portland Sea Dogs, who really have gone on a roll. They won last 14 of the last 15 games, and they surged into first place in the AA Northeast. We mentioned him a couple seconds ago, Brett Beatty. He got off to a rough start with the Rumble Ponies after coming back from the Futures game. He went 1-20 in the first series that he played, but he had a much better time of it this week. He went 5-20 with 2 doubles and a homer. And they all came on Saturday's game.
I was going to say, he, like, went nuts yesterday.
Yeah. Suffice it to say, I don't think any of us are panicking over bad 30 at-bat start to a double A. It's like, all right, he'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, first honestly, it's whatever. He walked 4 times this week as opposed to none, so that's also an improvement. And there was no marginal difference between his strikeouts. He struck out 7 times this week as opposed to 8 times the week before. So it's, whatever. But, I mean, you got to give him minimum a month or so before you can say any kind of type of conclusion about anything.
And look, it's a bad start. It's a bad start, but he's still walking 10% of the time. He's only striking out 33.3. Like, it's not a Khalili in the majors level strikeout rate. It's 90 weighted. For your first days of Double A, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. His fellow third baseman / left fielder Mark Vientos also, kind of ho-hum week. He went 4-20 with a homer. He had 4 walks and 5 strikeouts, so another kind of not the best week, but not putrid either. Honestly, it really wasn't a great week for any hitters outside of randomly Manny Rodriguez. He went 6-16 with a double and 2 home runs. Carlos Cortez, I guess, gets an honorable mention. He went 4-16 with 4 walks and 2 homers. And what makes it interesting, I guess, is he had a 154 BABIP. So if one or two of those outs become hits, a couple of all those walks and the homers, that in theory could have been play for the week territory. But, at the end of the day, they weren't. So it is what it is.
I don't understand why Cortez is still in Double A, frankly.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't called him up yet.
There's just no use putting him in AAA, I guess, because that's reserved for, the taxi squad. He's only playing the outfield this year, and Syracuse does have a ton of outfielders who are actually, hitting pretty well. So it's not like they have any pressing need to move Cortez.
That's fair, yeah. He's going to be like an unironic call up when dudes get hurt next year, which is pretty wild.
Oh boy.
I mean, he keeps hitting like this, and it's going to be hard to say no to him at some point, as crazy as that sounds.
Really, the only guy all week that had a good week for Binghamton was Jose Budo. He made his AA debut. He threw 6 solid innings, allowed 2 runs on 5 hits. He walked 1, he hit a batter, and he struck out 8. I've seen Budo too much, to be honest.
I think literally every Mets minor league person has seen too much of Jose Budo at this point.
Yeah. I saw it twice this season. I saw him once in 2019 when he was with the Fireflies, and then I saw him at least once in 2018 when he was with the Short A version of the Cyclones. And I think, what's the right word of putting it? He's not divisive. That's not the right way to put it. But there are certain individuals or organizations or outlets, whatever, that are much higher on him than myself, who have seen him too many times, and I don't see what they see. You know, he's not bad. Boring. He's not bad, but fastball sits low 90s. He tops out like 94, and he pairs it with like an average to above average changeup and a fringy, like bad fringy curveball. So, you know, with the system is what it is right now. You could probably say, you know, he's like the Mets' 26th best prospect. I would not disagree, but that's really more of an indictment on the system.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're saying, you know, than a glowing review of Buehl himself. And I don't really see Buehl improving all that much. You know, he's 23. And I'm not going to say he can't get better, but I just, you know, he's 23 already. I don't see him adding much size or anything at this point. So he just kind of is what it is. A guy with an average fastball, a solid to above average changeup, and really not that great of a curve. You know, seems like a guy that, you know, will get to double A and then probably flame out, as so many guys before him.
Yeah, I feel like if this was a system that actually was still good at developing pitchers, there's like a couple components here that you could squint and say, all right, if we do X, Y, and Z, this could be a usable piece, but the Mets are not currently a team that does a good job of developing pitchers. Instead, they let them go to the Mariners and turn into relief aces. So,
how is Justin Dunn doing? Is he relieving yet, or he's still starting?
I mean, I don't know what Justin Dunn's up to, but Paul Sewald's like a top five reliever in the American League somehow.
Oh, shit, he is?
Yeah, he's been incredible.
Disgusting. I don't understand.
Yeah, he's been so good.
I mean, I do understand. They just said, stop throwing your shit fastball, throw your good slider more.
Yeah.
And no, somehow the Mets can't figure out themselves. But
so basically they made him into Luke Gregerson.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Luke Gregerson made like, what, $20 million in his career?
Yeah, he got paid at least once, like a multi-year reliever deal type thing.
Good for Paul Sewald then, damn.
2.37 ERA, 1.71 FIP, 15.7 K9 with only 3.5 walks per
15.7?
Yes, 15.7.
Wow. Okay. Maybe we could trade him for Edwin Diaz.
Hey, get Jared Kelnick and his 40% strikeout rate back.
Exactly, so. I think that's fair.
Hitting 099 or whatever.
Uh-huh. Exactly, he's a bum, so just get a do-over. All right, the Brooklyn Cyclones now, they have a 5-game winning streak going. Maybe they extend it to 6 because they just started the finale to their series with Wilmington right now. Maybe they don't extend it to 6, but either way, you know, it was a good week. They were so far back in the standings, though, that even though they do have a 5-game winning streak, they're still not out of last place in the high A East North. But, you know, maybe if they can have a winning streak next week, too, maybe they can climb out of the bottom. But right now they are 27-42, which is 18 games behind the Hudson Valley Renegades. So hold
remember
on.
Remember when we thought every minor league affiliate was going to be good this year?
Yeah.
I thought they were going to, like, be competitive and win games, just not, like, prospect good, but damn.
They do win games just every so often, you know. Let's see. They're 18 games behind. Binghamton is 17.5 games behind. And Syracuse is 23.5 games behind, so, But anyway, the biggest and most important news regarding Brooklyn is that JT Ginn made his Brooklyn debut. He ended up going 5 2/3 innings, allowing a run on 5 hits. He didn't walk anybody, and he struck out 6. I was at the game. He looked pretty solid. Ton of ground balls. 2 of those 5 hits were cheapies or very easily could have been foul ball. Fastball, it's at 90-94, you know, was mainly 92-93. He mixed in a bunch of mid-80 sliders. They were legit good pitches. You know, I think they were basically all in the dirt, but everyone swung at them. And a couple of changeups. And that, you know, that pretty much matches all the stuff that he's been doing in St. Lucie since he started pitching again in June. I understand he's coming back from Tommy John, everything like that, you know, so it needs to be viewed through that lens. But I guess just having, like, watched him and really just, like, absorbed, you know, who he is as a pitcher and everything like that, he just doesn't feel dynamic enough to have front of the rotation potential. He really, I feel like he's really more of a back end of the pitcher, back end of the rotation pitcher. And that's fine. That's still a good outcome.
It's very David Peterson-y vibes.
I think he's a little better than that.
Like, I think so too. But vibes. Yeah.
Yes.
Of course, this could completely change. You know, like we've been saying since the beginning, like he might just be easing, and his coaches might be telling him, just ease yourself back in. Because my main thing is just the fastball did not seem dynamic. Mm-hmm. I feel like a guy that, you know, throws 90, a right-handed pitcher that throws 90, 94 is mainly sitting 92, 93. You're not going to have crazy success as a major leaguer without a really solid fastball to be able to hang your head on. And at least right now, he's not showing that. It's not a bad fastball. He got, you know, quite a few swing and misses with it. I think he had one. Let me look here. He had 3 strikeouts with the fastball. One was looking, and 2 were swinging. But
I wonder, do we have any of the StatCast numbers on his fastball in terms of its spin rate or efficiency, or not really?
Yeah, it's not really an above-average spin rate. Mm. But again, that's also something I was thinking about whenever it was. I don't remember when I was thinking about it. But, like, the whole notion of what is an average spin rate, an above-average spin rate, we probably have to reconceptualize all of that at the end of the season, given the crackdown and everything. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's true.
He might be throwing what is an average or slightly above average spin rate fastball right now that, you know, in the beginning of the 2022 season, when we have this data and everything gets adjusted, might all of a sudden be a firmly above average pitch in terms of spin rate. So, but
I mean, there are certainly ways to succeed without great fastball velocity, and he might even still have a couple ticks in the tank, given that he's coming back from TJ. But
right, that's the thing. Like, if he does, that's a completely game. That's a makes him a completely different pitcher. Like Justin, like I mentioned before, Justin Dunn, he had a dynamic fastball and a very good slider. And Ginn right now is not really throwing, is not really showing a dynamic fastball, but he is throwing that same kind of slider. Mm-hmm. So yeah. You know, if he can start throwing a fastball with some giddy up that reaches, you know, the mid and upper 90s, then that's very different. And that was something that in college he was supposed to be able to do. But we'll see. He might not even be a member of the organization next
week.
Yeah,
I think he's one of the guys who I would circle for trading for someone.
I'm still all aboard the trade Ronnie Mauricio as fast as possible train, but
I wouldn't be surprised if the Mets are too, but just
well, let's,
or in,
let's,
the, in the fold and everything.
Let's get to him, I guess, and this would be a good week to trade him if you can kind of fool an organization. What teams are out there that you could fool, pull a quick one by the
Cubs.
Yeah, but he's done.
I think the Twins were scouting the Mets too. Mm.
I'm trying to come up with, like, what a Twinsy player is, and I've got nothing. They're just, like, the most blah organization.
Yeah, they really like. Are.
Well, Mauricio is having a very streaky season, and this was the a peak
the
right
side,
now.
Yeah, the good side.
Yeah, not factoring whatever happens today because the game is going on right now. He went 6-for-20 with a double and a homer, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. And if you want to expand things back to an arbitrary time point, the beginning of July, he is hitting 288, 329, 470 with 3 doubles, 3 homers, 3 walks, and 11 strikeouts in 17 games. So that's, you know, almost an entire month, and that's a pretty solid batting line.
Yeah. And
I don't want to say he's always been a streaky hitter because I really don't think we just don't have enough data to really say that. But at least his peaks and valleys in 2019, the first time that he played a whole season, it made more sense. You know, he had a solid first half of the season, He had 290, 333, 394. And then he didn't, like, crater completely, but he did have really poor second half. He had 244, 280, 320 in the second half. So, you know, it just the timing of it, you could be like, oh, yeah, he was just 18. He's playing his first season. It's easy to conceptualize him just kind of tiring over the course of the season. And that's not really, I don't want to say an excuse, but that's not really something I don't think you can really say would be the case this year. And it feels like he's just really struggling to find consistency. He gets hot and he trails off.
Mm-hmm. I think he's just a weird player. Like,
yeah. And also something to think about while I was writing all this stuff down, I was like, I don't know if the weekly, it might really just be the regular ups and downs of a week, of 2 weeks, of a month, whatever, just feel magnified because of the way the format of the minors now, it's just more easily digestible. You know, you're just having a 6-game block, then a week off, then a 6-game block against another team, then a week off. So, like, okay, you could just look at each of those 6-game blocks and analyze it, whatever. Whereas, you know, 2019, everything year before, like, you could go a week or two, whatever, before having, like, a game off or scheduled day off, whatever. And everything just looked more jumbled. So the peaks and valleys here might just be kind of magnified just by way of what the season looks like, when in reality it's just kind of always been like that. I mean, we are just talking about little sample sizes here of a couple of games.
I mean, my explanation is much simpler. I just don't think he's good.
Well, there is that too. Well, one guy that we do know is good is Francisco Alvarez.
Yes.
And he had a kind of weird week. And again, keep in mind, Brooklyn's playing right now, so, you know, he could go off in this game and all of a sudden it's an amazing week instead of a weird one. But he went 3-for-15 in 4 games, which isn't really what you want to see, but 2 of those 3 hits were homers, so that's good. And I looked at his numbers because obviously I had to, but he's been Brooklyn for about 2 months now. Any guess what his batting line is on the season with them, which is 44 games?
280, 370, 420.
I think the last two numbers are close to what that is, but I know the batting average is lower than that because I looked him up a little bit ago. Not today, but the last time I looked up his batting average, it was like 260.
He is currently hitting 217.
Yeah.
335. 462 with 9 homers.
420 was way too low. I don't know what I was thinking there.
Yeah. 9 but homers, like, 22 walks, yeah, and 46 strikeouts.
As the youngest player in the league still,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's the thing. Yes,
by like a year. Not even like a few months or something. By like a full year. Like, he's young. He could repeat that, if anything. Exactly.
That level. And that's why I'm not concerned at all. A, he is just so young. B, all those underlying numbers, you know, 22 walks and 46 strikeouts in 44 games, that's fine. The power, obviously, is showing. That's fine.
He hits the shit out of the ball.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, his BABIP is 247, which is a little bit low even for him, a guy that is kind of a slowpoke. So, you know, if you bump the BABIP up 40 points.
Excuse me,
say,
he stole a base yesterday or two.
Oh, shit, that's right.
Ow. So I'm making this comp purely based on the body and because he was in town this week. But how happy are we if Francisco Alvarez becomes Alejandro Kirk?
I mean, he's a pretty good major league hitter.
Yeah.
I would feel like that's... So I was talking to Jeff Pettenasher about some prospect stuff a few days ago, and we were talking about Mauricio and, like, I was talking about like fan expectations and stuff, and like I was thinking about like if Mauricio isn't like a star but he's a good player, people will be like down on him about it.
Sure.
Because that's not what you expect, but that's a fine outcome, like an Alejandro Kirk type player, you know.
I mean,
because that's a good player. Like, not everyone's a star even if you're a top prospect.
Look at Amed Rosario. I mean, he did kind of have bad playing time, but he was a solid, when he was hitting, he was a solid hitter, but even if just, you know, being just okay is not good enough when you are.
He hit once. He was He wasn't
half season, half year, yeah.
Yeah, he never hit outside of that. Like, he wasn't a good player who we were
disappointed. He hit a little bit this year. He was starting, and then he went into a bad slump again. But yeah, he was like...
Maybe that's not a good example then. But the point is that even when you're hyped to, mm-hmm. you know, as, okay, you are the top prospect or you're going to be a good player or whatever, just being okay is just not generally good enough, you know?
Jerkson Profar?
That's a good one. He's definitely a major league contributor. But mm-hmm. like 8 years ago, that dude was like...
He was supposed to be the next coming. Yep.
Yeah, he was supposed to be like the next best player in baseball. And that just never happened. And he'll always be a bust in that regard, but also he's good. Like, he's not great. He's not amazing. He's a good major league player. He does a lot of good things for a baseball team. And most teams would be better off with him than without him. But also, he's not anywhere close to what people thought he was, so.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Like, it sucks for him, I guess, because he'll always carry, like, not being the top prospect guy, like, not being the next best player in baseball, but also he got paid and he plays baseball for a
living. Yeah, I'm sure he's crying. He's drying his tears with his $21 million contract.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, on one
to
hand,
to live and play baseball in San Diego.
For a team that's, like, a World Series contender.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh-hoo.
But, yeah, it's just, it's one of those things where, like, the expectations of, in baseball especially, like, sometimes the top prospects are just going to be good players, even if they're top prospects. Top prospect doesn't equal Mike Trout or DeGrom or Lindor or someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
Top prospect means the top of the best prospect out of a group of prospects. That could be any range of things.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head, like the last Mets play, the Mets top prospect. I mean, obviously, you know, Rosario kind of has not lived up to any expectation yet, but outside of that,
Jimenez was up there, and I mean, he hasn't really gotten a shot outside of 1 year.
Right. I mean, he hasn't really, and when he did play last season, he was pretty solid.
I think that's actually a good example, though, because like he was a top prospect in the system and was about a league average hitter, and that's because of what the type of hitter he was. It's just that he's not going to hit for power. But
I don't think anybody got on his case, though, for not...
That's true, yeah. No one really expected, like, anything else out of that.
David Peterson was never a top prospect. We had Pete Alonso as a top prospect in 18 or 19. I think he's lived up to those expectations.
Yeah.
Here are a couple other good ones going back a little further. I don't think they were ever number one, but they were up there. Jason Hayward and Matt Wieters.
Wieters, yeah.
Yeah, both. Wieters is a really good one.
Wieters is supposed to be another guy that was supposed to be like the next big thing.
Right. And he's like, oh, you just had, I mean, Hayward then got that huge contract, which also plays into this narrative, but he's been a usable big league player for a while. And if you're talking about median outcomes, like that's so much better than most guys you evaluate. Jay Bruce, another former number. I'm just going back through BP's old top 100.
Wasn't Hayward also the like amazingly good hitter for like the first 2 or 3 years?
Oh, he had a really hot start, then a really good walk year, and then that's it. And then Alex Gordon, like, here's another good one.
He's like, I got paid, I'm done.
Yeah. Alex Gordon was the top prospect in 2007. Just good career, not great. Right.
Yeah. He was definitely a good player, though.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, underrated, because he was in KC and they were bad for basically.
Ever.
Yeah. Outside of.
They were good long enough to beat the Mets in the World Series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks. Outside of the end of his career, though, he was just on some really bad teams.
Mm-hmm.
Well, suffice to say, I think we all agree that Alvarez probably will have a major league career at the rate that he's going, and hopefully. He has won, like he has had. You know,
so literally, that stat line, like 217. I don't remember the other numbers he said, but they were in the threes and fours. That's probably a good major league catcher.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and no one would be particularly overjoyed with something like that because of the 217. But also, like, you have to factor in what catcher is in Major League Baseball today.
The thing is, his hit tool is better than his power, you know, at least in my opinion. So I think, like, just give him, I mean, it's been 2 months, which...
Of course, yeah, I'm not...
It's an okay amount of time, but I think he will hit. I mean, we'll see, but... I think that the average will like be a very, very, very good average.
Not that you ever want to do this sort of thing based solely on the stat line, but if he's hitting like this, you'd let him finish the season here and then start him, maybe start him here next year with a very quick trigger. When he's like batting 400, 600, 800 or something after 2 weeks, you say, all right, you're going to double A now.
I also think like age is still a factor there where you don't necessarily always want him to be the youngest player in the league at all times if you could help it. Like letting him kind of play with the competition of like letting him kind of be the average age of a league for a little bit would be fine for him because he'll be able to really thrive and then you can move him up. And make him the youngest guy in the league again, but you don't have to rush him. There's no rush with him. Like, there's no reason to try to put the rocket to his back and swing him up the system. Like, you could take your time with him. It's fine. He's 19.
I think we can attribute some of the struggle to watching all of his coworkers going out after games and having the cold brews and just him being a good boy, not partaking in such activity,
I would say Carrasco had a lot of nice things to say about him, which is nice. Like, obviously he's not going to go out into the media and just like dump all over the kid, but you always like to see that.
We call that right there a Tony La Russa.
All right, well, now finishing on a high note is St. Lucie Mets. They've been consistently good, and they had another good week this week. They went 4-2, which bumped them up to 39-33 on the season, which is three games ahead of the Jupiter Hammerheads in the low A Southeast East. Jalen Palmer, he broke his 209 at-bat homerless streak.
Yay!
In his first homer of the year, and he had a real productive week. He went 8-25 with a double, that home run, and a stolen base. And that brings his season total to 284, 383, 391.
I want to believe.
Yeah, I like him.
13 doubles, 4 triples, that home run, and 23 stolen bases in 60 games.
Oh.
With 35 walks and 72 strikeouts. He's running a BABIP over 400 right now, but he is that kind of player that could maintain a super high BABIP. He's really fast. He sprays line drives all over the place. So, maybe not 400, but.
Yeah, he's the type of guy who could run a higher BABIP than you would think, just speed and making contact and all that.
Right. I mean, I'm sure there's some regression, but it's not going to be like crashing back to Earth reality regression.
I mean, there are two concerns with him. Earlier this year, when he was really struggling, it's like the strikeouts and the lack of power. And he's curbed the strikeouts to a point where it's livable. He's been around 25% most of the time since the awful start. But he's still got an almost 2-to-1 ground ball to fly ball ratio. And I by no means think they should do what they did to Andrés Giménez to Jalen Palmer, like try to turn a dude that isn't. I mean, with Giménez, it was very obvious he wasn't a power hitter, and Palmer has the frame for it. Like, he doesn't.
Palmer is 100% a power hitter. Well, right. Okay, excuse me. That's not the right word. Power hitter is a certain archetype. He is a guy that has power.
Yes, and he should not. If Andrés Giménez has a 2-to-1 ground ball to fly ball ratio, I think that's too high, but it's not a huge problem. Jalen Palmer should not have a 2-to-1 ground ball to fly ball ratio. Like, he needs to lift the ball more. So I'm still a little concerned on that front.
I think that what's going on with him is one of the more interesting things that's going on in the system so far.
Yes.
And it's just such an annoyance that there is no, video feed from St. Lucie. Because I saw him in Kingsport. I have videos of him. So, like, I know what his swing, to compare. We could be able to compare and see, okay, what is it different? What different is going on with this swing that's causing the lack of home run power, that's causing such a high ground ball rate? Like, what is going on? And, we have some StatCast data and stuff, but just being able to see would make things so much easier in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing good things,
Third base center field defensive profile is interesting, too.
Mm-hmm.
He could probably play second, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, he played. So he could play second. He could play short. He played third. Obviously, center base. Jesus Christ. Center field is new. Center base.
Calm down there, Rob Manfred. We're not adding an extra base in the outfield.
His ears just perked up. And he's like, I got an idea, boys. Mm-hmm. What if we put a base in center field?
But, yeah, he is a very exciting player. And if the season ended now and that was, like, his final line, that would still be, like, a super positive development for him. Because doing it in St. Lucie, low A St. Lucie, is a bit more legitimate, you know, than doing it in rookie ball Kingsport, you know, from 2019. Mm. Another guy that's having a good week, Alex Ramirez. He went 6-for-19. He's currently hitting .256, .324, .369 on this season now. Pretty solid. You know, not in a vacuum. It's like, all right. But for an 18-year-old with his first month or whatever it is of professional baseball, that's solid. He also has 12 stolen bases on the year, too. Though it did come with 5 caught stealings, which is not necessarily ideal. But, again, he's 18. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Good to see.
He's playing. This counts as full season ball, right? Yeah. So he's playing full season ball as a teenager. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. The last real standout on St. Lucie this week was Jose Peraza. He went 9-for-21 with 2 doubles, a homer, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts, and that brings his season total to a very solid .272, .413, .421, with 13 doubles, 1 triple, and 5 home runs in 58 games. Solid, very, very solid peripherals. 58 walks to 60 strikeouts. He's been a guy of interest. He just turned 21 a couple of weeks ago. He was signed as an international free agent in 2017, I believe. So St. Lucie, you know, is an appropriate competition level for him. I think if he maintains this pace, you know, even if he finishes the season with this exact batting line, I think that he's definitely forced himself into discussion for the back half of our 2022.
In a thin system, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And the thing with him, the story with him is he was always a power over hit guy, but this year it's the opposite. He's hitting for a very solid average, and he's not hitting too much. He's not hitting for too much power, in terms of home run power anyway. And he is a really stocky, muscular guy, so the power should come, you know, I would hope, anyway. So it'll be interesting if he's turning himself into, you know, another corner infield guy that the Mets have.
I have an irrational hatred for him because I cannot keep Peraza and Peraza straight in my head. So someone's got to go.
Damn.
There can only be one.
All right, well, let's move on now to, oh, yeah, that guy. Thomas, funny. I think you have someone for us.
I do. So this guy actually has major league time, which is fun for an oh, yeah, that guy, because he played 2 years for the Mets. Well, 77 total games over 2 years. But I will always remember this individual because he is the first Brooklyn Cyclone to ever play for the Mets. And
Danny Garcia?
Yes. I remember that being such a fun thing when I was – so when the Cyclones first came back, I had, like, partial season tickets for a few years. And we would go, like, to a game or two every weekend or something like that, like, right behind home plate. They were really nice seats because it was minor league baseball. They were cheaper than the Mets. And my parents were both huge baseball fans. That's the reason why I'm a Mets fan. So we would go all the time. Like, I saw all those Cyclones teams, those early 2000s, for, like, a few years, like, everyone, from Mike Jacobs on down. And I remember Garcia, like, was super good for the Cyclones for a little bit and then moved on up because he hit .321, .387, .411 in, like, 15 games, and they were like, all right, you're done here. Go up to full season when they were still in the Penn League. But, yeah, it's just he was a fun little guy, and he's someone that I always remember. Just because, like, he was a minor league guy, and then a few years later, he was in the majors, and I was like, oh, wow, like, that happens, you know? Because being from Brooklyn, I never saw minor league baseball much because it's always in places that were not close to me, like Staten Island. The Yankees didn't have the Staten Island Yankees didn't exist yet either. And we wouldn't go to Jersey because if we were going to go out there, we would just go to see the Mets. Like, you know,
just wouldn't go to Jersey. You could have just stopped there.
Like if we were going to hop in the car and drive to a baseball game, it would be the Mets, you know, like we wouldn't go to see a minor league team at that point. So, so yeah, it was just, he's an, oh yeah, that guy for me, just because he's the first guy I remember as a minor leaguer making it. And I saw him play in the minors. And so he always held a little special place in my heart. He was a good little minor league player. He played 300 games in the minor, well, 289 games in the minor leagues. And he hit 254, 320, 352, and that very much led to his major league career of hitting 227, 345, which is a very high OBP, which is surprising, and 361 for the Mets over 77 games in some bad Mets teams in 2003 and 2004. And then he tried to make it again as I think he signed with the Yankees in their minor league system. Yes, he did. And then he played indie ball for a year, and then that was it. He just kind of flamed out after that. But yeah, Danny Garcia, the first Cyclone to ever be a New York Met, which is a fun one.
That, you know, those teams predated SNY, so it was a lot more difficult to catch Mets games because of that. But I honestly don't remember a single instance of Danny Garcia doing anything in the major leagues.
Oh, no, he didn't. Like,
yeah, no, yeah.
He hit 5 home runs in 77 games and hit 227. Like, he wasn't
played, he played enough to get his pension.
Yep,
that's true. That's true.
I think.
I would think so.
I think that's I don't know, actually, but I'll imagine it's true because it's nice.
Hopefully he has a baseball card then, something.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of memento for his time, either a pension or a card, whatever.
I'm sure he has his first hit ball.
Angel Pagan and Mike Jacobs were also on that team.
Better careers.
Yeah,
and some dudes. That is one of the trades I get most irrationally angry about. The Angel Pagan for Andres Torres and that terrible
the pitcher
Ramon Ramirez.
Yeah, that's it. I think so dumb.
Listen, the Mets do a lot of dumb things.
So dumb. Frank Kaur led that team in OPS.
Jeez,
He hit 302.
Home run leaders.
He hit 302, 365, 594 in 61 games.
He's one of the all-time home run leaders of Cyclone history. Not the, but one of.
Yeah, he played there for a while, 2 years.
He's not as prolific a home run hitter as Luke Ritter is, of course. But do you happen to remember Jake Ruckel?
Vaguely, I remember the name.
Mm-hmm, okay.
You guys are pulling some names that I've never heard of before at this point.
It's because, like, when you see these guys, like, game in and game out, you start, like, I was basically watching them as much as I was watching the Mets live.
Yeah, I mean, it's super nice to live that close to a minor league stadium, absolutely. Yeah. I think the closest to me growing up was probably in, like, Lakewood, which wasn't exactly close, so.
Mm-hmm. And it was, like, I remember, I have, like, Angel Pagan's autograph somewhere, and when I was signing it, I dropped the ball to give it to him, and he was, like, messing with me. He picked up, he was like, oh, this is mine now, and I was like, huh? Like, I didn't really get the joke, and he was like, no, I'm kidding. It's like, I'm going to sign it for you and give it back, because I look upset, I guess, because I was a kid. But it was just, it's one of those things that always stuck with me. Like, he always was very good with fans and stuff, because we would get there very early and get autographs and stuff. Like, I have a bunch of Cyclones autograph balls. And he was always good with that. He would always be out there and signing balls and stuff. So that was always fun.
Not all of the current Cyclones are.
I know.
Mauricio. All right, well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Our missing compatriot Ken is at KenLavin91, and Thomas is at SadMetSeasonSZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get podcasts from. Rate and review it. And of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.